Yeah, preferably don't munch on a bunch of pretzels during the
probably
show.
Probably don't want to do that. That's probably not good. Probably not good sound quality. Although it might be preferable. Who knows?
All right.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
And you can make fun of me for being wrong and praise me for being right.
You can only praise me for being right at my corner FWFB.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
It's like you said, we were in the bottom of the sixth, and I won 1-0 off a walk-off wild pitch, so that was fun.
Nice. Oh, that pissed me off.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
I agree with you, and I honestly think that the Yankees did what needed to be done.
I think they cleared a lot of room for Bryce Harper in 2018 to play with a lot of guys making the league minimum when he's making 40 million a year.
Agreed.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Yeah, welcome into episode 145 of the Friends with Fantasy Benefits baseball podcast. I'm your host, Mike Werner. You can reach me on Twitter at Mike Werner FWFB. And with me for another prospect edition of the podcast is our lead prospect analyst, Matt Thompson. Matt, how's it going, bud?
Good, man. Excited to get this trade deadline talk. A lot of big names moved. It's be fun.
Yes, it was a very eventful trade deadline for sure. We had some massive trades go down. We had some big names go to different teams. It was a very, very probably one of the most fun trade deadlines that I can remember in quite some time.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. A lot of movement. It brings me back to my days when I was like 14-15 years old. I would sit there with the trade deadline and I'd update my MLB the Show rosters as trades happened. So those were the good old days.
Man, I wish I had enough time to play MLB The Show nowadays. Like, I have one day of the week, Saturdays. Saturdays, I can play for a few hours, and I usually crush some people in Diamond Dynasty and that new Battle Royale thing they have. I'll play some people in that and crush them. You know, actually crush probably some kid's dreams on Saturday. He ended up being down on me like 3-0 in the Battle Royale. You only have 3 innings.
Yeah, so definitely.
In the second inning, I was up 3-0, and he hit a home run, so he was down 3-1. And then in the top of the third inning, he was up. I was the home team. He ended up scoring 3 runs off of me. So it was 4-3. He was going into the last inning, and I ended up getting the bases loaded. And, you know, I was still down by 1 run with 1 out. And I ended up, lining out. I thought I ended up having a base hit, and I ended up lining out, and it wasn't deep enough for me to score. So with 2 outs and the bases loaded, I had I believe it was Jared Saltalamacchia, like the classic version of him come up. Yeah. Either way, I crushed the kid's dreams. He threw me an outside fastball. I laced it down the left field line, and, you know, that's all she wrote. But, yeah, a little
I was playing that same mode as you. I don't play that much, but I was playing a game, and it's only 3 innings, like you said. We were in the bottom of the sixth, and I won 1-0 off a walk-off wild pitch, so that was fun.
Nice. Oh, that would piss me off.
Yeah, it was crazy.
That's our MLB The Show talk for this week.
Paul Sport would be proud.
Yeah, he would be. But, where can everybody reach you on Twitter, Matt, if they don't know already, by the way?
MD Top 24.
Yeah, you're very active on there, so definitely get at you for any prospect questions or keeper league, dynasty league comments, anything like that.
Please do.
Just to remind everybody, we are sponsored by officialfantasyrings.com. You can customize your ring on officialfantasyrings.com, and it's a great, great trophy or prize for your league. It only costs a few bucks per person to kind of throw down and pitch in to get yourself a prize that will kind of last and that you can carry along with you. Right now, if you put in the promo code FWFB at checkout, you will receive 20% off instead of 10% like it's been earlier in the season. So definitely go ahead and head to officialfantasyrings.com and put in that FWFB promo code at checkout. Also, please rate and review the podcast. Please give us 5 stars on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, anything that you can rate and review the podcast. That would be much appreciated. We do this absolutely free, take a lot of time to do it, and we're trying to get, you know, a little bit more popular and have more people find us. So that is certainly the best way for that to happen. So please, if you have any time, be generous and rate and review us.
I can't wait to win our fantasy football listener league and fly to San Francisco and punch Justin in the face with my ring.
Yeah. But, or like, can't wait. Like Cam likes to say is punch your defeated foes in the face. He always has the same lingo on the DFS pod. So
it's still late for him to redo it, right? Is he ever going to do it?
Yeah, no, it's a little too late for that.
Oh yeah.
But with that said, we are going to get into kind of the meat of the show here. The, you know, what we're going to do is, you know, as usual, we're going to talk about promotions and a bunch of different things. But, you know, what we'll do, especially in this one, is we'll talk promotions at the beginning. We have a few guys that were called up. The latest couple that we talked about were Alex Bregman and then David Dahl. Those were the last two guys on our last show that we talked about. So we had a few other promotions in the last week or so. And then we're also going to go through, like we kind of mentioned on the main podcast, we're going to go through some of the trades, but not for the MLB side, for the minor league side. So
definitely looking forward to it.
Yeah. And just so everybody knows, we like to keep things, we're not going to talk about every little prospect. We want to keep things towards, you know, mainly, you know, guys that have a chance of being a top 100 prospect at some point. So, you know, again, we're not going to talk about every single prospect that was traded or moved in at the deadline, but we will, you know, we'll touch on at least every guy that has some type of meaning, at least for now.
Yeah. And if you have a question about anybody, please hit me up on Twitter. If I might not be able to have a ton on a guy, like a obscure guy, I at least have a couple notes I can pass along to you. So please do that.
Absolutely. So let's get into it, man. We have Gary Sanchez just got his promotion from AAA. It looks like they are going to have him catch and DH at the major league. And somebody that's always possessed a good amount of power in the minor leagues, somebody that personally I've always been quite high on, probably a little bit too high on, if you're asking me. But, you know, this year really cut down the strikeout rate, 14.5% down in the minor leagues. You know, not the best ISO in the world, but staying with a good power stroke. Going to be heading into Yankee Stadium. I think he's there to stay for the rest of the year. So us as fantasy owners will be able to get a good, you know, kind of temperature on what we can expect from somebody like Sanchez. But, you know, the last three games, he has 3 doubles, and he's done a pretty good job of not striking out a whole lot. You know, he's certainly striking out a bit, but not as much as you might think at the beginning of his career here. Matt, give us a little update on Gary Sanchez. What do you think his outlook is for the future and all of that jazz?
Yeah, a lot of post-hype sleeper with this guy. He's been around for a while around prospect circles. He's a big prized amateur free agent when they signed him out of the Dominican. He was billed as the next Jesus Montero. Remember that guy? he was supposed to be in the running with him for Yankees catcher of the future, and it looks like Sanchez, he's up to stay. With the A-Rod, recent A-Rod news that just went down the pipe and like Brian McCann getting older, like you said, Sanchez is going to split DH catcher job for the Bombers there. I think he's going to play pretty much every day. He played he caught the night game or the day game after a night game against Cleveland there on, over the weekend. So obviously they're going to give him as many innings as he can handle back there. And I think he's a top 10 catcher the rest of the way. I like the upside. And catcher's been so bad, I'd be willing to pay for Sanchez.
Wow, top 10 catcher. That's...
Yeah, I'm really high on him. I think he's going to hit. But
yeah,
for the rest of this season, I'm talking.
Yeah, no worries. So in Dynasty Keeper Leagues, are you putting him as a top 10 catcher going forward? Do you think he maintains catcher eligibility for the foreseeable future? Or do you think this could be like a Schwarber situation?
Well, I was kind of surprised. I mean, previous reports I was reading about him like said he was really bad at defense, like going into like the last year and a half. But like Baseball America, they do they release these lists. If they take each league, like AAA, and they give you like the best tools list, like best hitter, best power hitter, best like fastest guy, strongest throwing arm. One of the categories is best defensive catcher, and they said Gary Sanchez. And I was kind of surprised by that, and I was reading into it more, and he's vastly improved. And I watched him catch Sabathia against the Indians the other day, and he really handles the low pitches really well, really quiet behind the plate. So I think my opinion's changed, and I think he could stick there. So, I mean, I could put him, I'm going to put him top 10, maybe not for like 2017, only because I think McCann's still going to play a lot there and kind of eat into the playing time. But I really, really like Sanchez. I'm comfortable putting him top 15 for next year going forward and going forward.
Yeah, I agree with the top 15 stance. If you look at the leaders in terms of home runs at the catcher position this year so far, you have Wilson Ramos on top at 18. Jonathan Lucroy is a couple down, as well as Salvador Perez. Brian McCann's in there at 15. And, you know, I believe that the Yankees put McCann on waivers and he cleared them prior to the trade deadline. So, like, I don't think that it's out of the question that he gets moved in the offseason at some point. Not that I think it's a great move for the Yankees to do that, since McCann is just a proven power commodity behind the plate. But if you're asking me in fantasy where I think, you know, Gary Sanchez can rank in terms of home runs for a season, I think that he could definitely rank up there in the top five. If you take batting average into account, which is something that he will definitely need to work on, you know, for the in the minor leagues, he is somebody that has consistently hit for a pretty solid batting average. But we'll definitely see, you know, him struggle a bit in that category, at least at the beginning of his career. So I would expect more of like a 240 batting average for now, and then, you know, easily see him creep up as the seasons go on. Catcher is a position that, you know, typically doesn't give us a ton of output when they're young. Usually the production, the best production comes in their later years. But, you know, I'm on board with that. Top 15 catcher in keeper dynasty leagues, I'm completely fine with that. Would you take him or somebody like the really hot Sandy Leon in keeper dynasty?
Oh, gotta be Gary Sanchez.
Yeah, I still can't take Sanchez, but that's not to take away from what Leon's been doing, because no. I think people are just kind of passing over Leon like he's just been, you know, nothing this year. And, you know, he's really been a boost to fantasy owners. I also didn't involve Evan Gattis in that list because he technically, you know, hasn't accrued enough at bats to be on there yet. But he is the, if you were to go based on the catcher position as a whole, he would be the second highest home run getter at this point. He has 17. But, you know, overall, I think what you'll expect from Sanchez is, you know, somebody that's going to hit for at least double digit power. I would expect possibly 20 if he was to get a full season was worth of bats.
Definitely. Yep.
And, you know, you'll see the batting average kind of fluctuate. But overall, if you're watching him the rest of the way, you'll certainly want to see the strikeout rate not exceed 25% or so. I would think it's a win if it's around 20% or under. And as long as he, you know, doesn't strike out more than that and he keeps the ISO up, hits a few, I'd say if he hits five bombs the rest of the way, keeps the strikeout percent probably around 25 or under, then that's a pretty big win.
Agreed. And like I said earlier, I think he's going to get all the catching he can handle the rest of the way on out. And there's a good point you brought up about McCann. I think there's a chance McCann might get moved before the end of the month then. I mean, to be honest.
He very well could.
It wouldn't be that shocking. And I guess I'm higher on Sanchez than I should be, but I love the pedigree. He's only 23 years old, and catchers, like you said, kind of late peak. They might not come into their own until 27, 28. So you're playing a little bit of the long game here with Sanchez. If you can be patient for a year and a half, I think you're going to have a stud on your hands from that catching position.
Absolutely. Let's talk about another stud minor leaguer, and that is Orlando Arcia. He just received his promotion from AAA, came up to the Milwaukee Brewers, and we'll talk about a couple moves they've made here later on in the podcast.
They've made a couple major.
Yeah, a couple small ones. That
a couple, you know, probably, of tiny ads, yeah.
Nobody probably noticed them, but, you know, we'll talk about them just to be thorough.
Yeah, sure.
Somebody like Arcia, he just made his way up. He has been hitting in the number two spot in the lineup. Over the last couple of games, they started him off in the number seven spot, but a ton of pundits, a ton of minor league prospect analysts have been really, really high on Orlando Arcia since, you know, last season, even the season before. From a fantasy perspective, you know, we've kind of already touched on Arcia in the main show, but from a fantasy perspective, where would you rank Arcia in terms of shortstops, at least for now?
This is going to sound like I'm really down on him, but I'm not. But the shortstop position is deep. We talk about this a lot. I don't think it gets people to understand how deep it is. It's way deeper than people are giving it credit for. Like I said, we beat that to death on here, but it's worth knowing, because shortstop isn't like it was 3 years ago. There's a ton of depth at the position, but like Arcia, I think he's a way better real-life player than fantasy guy. His best asset for the Brewers is going to be the glove. That's why he kicked VR to third base. And I think they're doing the absolute right thing by batting him second, even though he doesn't have the skills to do that right now. He's a really aggressive guy, and he's never gonna post good on base percentage numbers. So his best tool is his speed. He might not get on base enough for it to play. Not that high on him from fantasy aspect. And I'm not really going out of my way to roster him in a lot of formats, but he's borderline top 20, like maybe 20th. I'm not that high on the kid.
I'm not either, and I never really have been. You know, from a fantasy perspective, he's going to hit from the top of the lineup, so you'll see some runs scored in this Brewers lineup. Great place to hit in Miller Park. Definitely doesn't strike out at all. I mean, he does a really good job of putting the bat to the ball, which is what you want out of a leadoff hitter. But I honestly think that he is a, you know, 25 to 30 stolen base guy with a good amount of runs scored, probably a solid batting average, and that's about it. You know, you'll see, you know, possibly double-digit power once he hits kind of his, you know, prime years. But after that, you'll kind of see a tail off in the power, and you'll be pretty much relying on 25 to 30 stolen bases and solid batting average, which is fine, you know. And yep. I guess if you're looking at it from, like, it'd be one thing if he was D. Gordon, who could steal 50, 60 bags, but he's just not that fast. I mean, he is a fast individual, but he's not somebody that in fantasy I can see stealing 50 bases, which means that, you know, he is half of what Mike Trout is.
I agree, and I guess an easy cop-out for saying it for Arcia from the fantasy perspective with power. The power isn't – I'd probably put a 40 on it right now, if that even. I mean, that might be even aggressive. The speed's going to be – he's got plus speed, but he doesn't get on base enough. And like I said, his number one carrying tool for you right now to worry about is going to be the batting average, because it's if he hits, he's going to run. But you know how that, because he's not going to walk. So he's a guy that you should be in on long term, but don't go crazy. Like I said, I just put him for top 20 option for next year barely. But yeah, don't get too excited for this year.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. I think we're in agreement somewhere in the top 20. You know, I'm sounding like I think he's a bad player, but I don't. You know, I think that he'll be a solid fantasy contributor for a long time. I just don't think he has the upside to be like a top five guy at the shortstop position, especially with the landscape the way it is, you know?
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned it, because I think his number one appeal to fantasy owners is he's going to stick at shortstop for 15 years.
Yeah, which is the truth. I mean, he's going to be a solid major leaguer for a long, long time.
So, yeah, and that's exactly what he offers you. Like a little bit kind of Edgar Renteria-ish.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, kind of going, you know, staying with the path of talking about call-ups, we will talk about the guy that I possibly loathe more than any other minor league prospect in the game.
Well, I need to call somebody about this, because you kind of, it's unreal hate here.
Yeah, it's getting a bit, it's getting to be a bit of a problem, but Andrew Benintendi finally got his shot to play in the major leagues. He has started in each of the last two games. It seems to me like he is going to be playing strictly against righties, which is fine. You know, sure. That's what you would probably expect from somebody that is, you know, skipping AAA altogether and going straight to the major leagues. But you have forever been very high on Andrew Benintendi since he got drafted, essentially. What can we expect for this year, and what can we expect for the future?
See, this is kind of a cop-out, but I don't really know what to expect this year, because, like you said, he's only playing against righties. I mean, he's going to make a lot of contact. He's not going to strike out a lot, but he's already struck out three times in 13 at-bats without walking, so making me look a little bad on that aspect, but I think that's kind of a fluky thing. It's such a small sample. He's a really, if you haven't seen him play, you're going to get really struck when you see him, because he's a really, really tiny dude. And it kind of took me back a little bit, because he looks even smaller, you know, from watching him on MILB TV. He looks a little bit, he doesn't look as small, but when you're in the major leagues, like looking, standing next to guys like Ortiz and stuff on his team, he looks like a tiny dude. He's 5'10", 170 listed. I don't even know if he's 5'10", to be honest. But for all you need to know is he barrels the ball. He makes a ton of contact. He can run. He's a plus defender, especially in left field, so he's going to play. I like the kid long term. He's in my top 10 long term, and good ballpark for him. Being a lefty, he hits the ball to all fields. He's gonna be banging balls off that monster for a decade. Obviously, Benintendi in any keeper dynasty league format worth a crap, he's already owned. Enjoy it, because he's going to be a stud, I think. He's going to be a solid player for you for many years.
Yeah, the comparison I've always made to him is Paul O'Neill. And I think that that's pretty much what you'll see from him. So as much as I want to say that I hate Andrew Benintendi, you know, the real thing here is that I hate Red Sox, and, you know, he's a Red Sox player. He's yet another reason that I'm going to hate the Red Sox, because he is a solid player. I mean, we talk about plate skills all the time. He doesn't strike out, makes a ton of contact, like you already mentioned. He walks at a very solid clip. You know, I do not like that he skipped AAA. So, I'm going to try and make sure that I'm not being, you know, just kind of crazy here, or, you know, just somebody that's down on somebody just to be down on them. But at the same time, I do get concerned. Even the best prospect in all baseball coming into last year, Byron Buxton, he skipped AAA, and we saw how that kind of turned out. Now, I think Andrew Benintendi, from a skills perspective, is more advanced, and he's been more advanced since day one than Byron Buxton, even though I think Buxton has more tools, and we'll see that kind of play out either negatively or positively in the long run.
Definitely.
You know, but at least this year, the rest of the way, I think he's more of a fourth, fifth outfielder in regular mixed leagues. You know, in 10-team leagues, I don't necessarily think he's even worth a pickup right now. You know, he will be okay, but I don't think he's much better than replacement value in those size leagues. He's really more of an AL-only play for this year, with, you know, obviously speculation for what he'll be next year. If he, you know, I still think that there's a chance that he starts off in AAA next year, because the Red Sox are a smart organization. They don't want to miss on somebody like Benintendi, even though he's almost as, you know, he's almost as sure, a big of a sure thing as you possibly can get, you know, in terms of production. But, you know, overall, I don't like the fact that he skipped AAA. And I think that, you know, as the season goes on, you'll either see him start to struggle a bit and he'll start off next season in AAA, or he'll have some success. And even if he does, you know, still start off in AAA next year.
I think you nailed everything you said. I can get behind. The only thing I have a minor disagreement with is I don't think skipping AAA is a big deal. A lot of guys in AAA are these grumpy, sour guys that don't feel like they got their fair chance. And I mean this. They don't feel like they got a shot, and it's kind of like full of, the land full of Yasiel Puigs. And
that's messed
up. Sometimes you don't want guys. I mean, I'm not questioning Benintendi's makeup, because, I mean, everything I've heard and read sounds like it's off the charts. But sometimes exposing the guy to AAA and is not the great. You don't really need to. A lot of the pitchers in AAA, you're looking at guys that are junk ballers, and you're not looking at the guy. A lot of the high velocity arms aren't really down in the minors. I believe consistently year after year, AAA is got the lowest average velocity level of any minor league, only because, you know, the guys in AA throw hard and they get switched, and they're not in AAA long. You know what I mean? They throw hard and move to the pen maybe and come up. There's all different scenarios there. But Benintendi, the only prospect I think that has a higher floor than Benintendi is probably Bregman. I mean, and that's what you're getting. That's what you're paying for in Benintendi. You're using such a high pick. Yeah, sure, he might not be the perennial MVP candidate, which everyone keeps talking about, because I don't think he will be. I don't think he'll ever be the best offensive player on his own team. But he's going to be a steady, great source. And I really love your Paul O'Neill comp, except I think Benintendi has a little better attitude than Paul O'Neill.
Yeah, Eli showed me the kickball.
Yeah, that's an all-time great.
Legendary stuff.
Out of frustration, and it's a perfect kick to the cutoff man.
Anyways, so I think that gives a pretty good gauge of Benintendi. I'm not trying to be irrationally negative about him. I just think that it's going to take a little bit of time. You know, I think next season, the second half, he'll be a solid contributor. And
agreed.
That's about
I'm trying not to be outrageously positive either. I think we kind of split the middle there. I think we're being realistic about it.
Absolutely. So let's move on to some deals that were made. And so, you know, we had some big deals that were made. The first one we'll talk about here is the Dodgers and Oakland deal that sent Frankie Montas, Jarrell Cotton, and Grant Holmes all to the Oakland Athletics, that desperately needed some, you know, farm help in their farm system, for sure. And they sent Josh Reddick and Rich Hill over to the Dodgers. You know, we'll start it off
with... We called that, by the way. We called Rich Hill and Josh Reddick going to the Dodgers in our pod that we did, but anyways.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to toot our own horn. That's a deal that, you know, a lot of people, you know, probably thought was going to happen. But regardless, you know, we're looking at a guy in Frankie Montas that, you know, has shown some upside and some flashes in the past. Just give us a little update on what you're feeling about him. Do you think he is a major league starter in the long run? He's kind of been shipped away to a few teams now. You know, he started off with the Red Sox, then he went to the White Sox, then he went to the Dodgers. Now he's with Oakland's system, which, you know, is a great place to pitch if he ever gets to the Athletics. But, you know, what's going on with him recently?
Here's what I have in my notes on Montas, and I kind of wrote down in this trade, he's the lottery ticket for me. I actually like Holmes. I like Cotton a lot. I think they can both be starters, but we'll get to them in a minute. Montas, he's on the DL right now with a rib injury. Despite the trade, he's getting a rib removed, I believe. I could be wrong on that, but I believe that's what I read. He's not pitching again to the Arizona Fall League, so he's been shut down for the rest of the season for the A's. I still believe he's a reliever long-term. All the injury concerns and the command problems, he hasn't gotten a chance to work on them because he hasn't been throwing. And when you hit 100 miles an hour, I think the team's going to want you up in the major leagues pumping that gas. So that's velocity's king nowadays. And when you are missing so much time, and he's already on the 40-man roster, he was on the White Sox two teams ago. Not being in the major leagues or not pitching in the minors and having a chance to improve on the breaking ball and the changeup, because they're not even major league average right now, not even close. He's just got the fastball, which he can't relocate that well. And it's a big red flag for me being on his fourth team. Not a good thing. The command issues, I think, will ultimately bury him in relief. I'm not even sure he's going to get high leverage innings.
So, yeah, for me, I agree with you. I think that in the long run, he's a bullpen arm. There has been some concern about how long that velocity stays during games. It seems to kind of wither a bit.
Yeah, he's a bad conditioning. Conditioning's an issue with this dude. He's kind of a bigger dude.
Yeah, he does have a big body, a nice frame. He's working on that third pitch, the changeup. He has a nice, you know, curve, slider, slutter, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, overall, a guy with two pitches, high velocity, that can't, you know, keep it throughout the game, that is kind of injury prone, that typically profiles as a reliever. So if you're looking at it from a keeper dynasty sense, I think it's safe to assume that he's going to be a reliever. But if somebody's going to kind of give him away for nothing, I'm willing to speculate on him either being a high leverage closer. It's not like they have, you know, Doolittle has been continuously injured. They have Ryan Matson in that role. You could easily see somebody like Montas taking that over at some point. Or, you know, somebody just like Edwin Diaz. I mean, we talked about Edwin Diaz before he got called up. And now, I mean, we've mentioned since day one that he could easily be a high leverage reliever for them. All of a sudden, now he's closing games and probably is going to be a top 7-8 closer going into next year's drafts. Montas has that same upside, but I, you know, in my opinion, I just don't think he'll start.
I agree. And it's a big, big red flag for me for a dude to be on his fourth organization by 23 years old. I think that's, you know what I mean? There's something there. I mean, yeah, the velocity is, everyone loves it, but there's got to be something more there.
Yeah, and I mean, from one, I've heard multiple people say, on the other hand, that the other teams wanted you, so it's not necessarily a bad thing.
Sure, yeah. No, and it goes both ways. You're absolutely right, and that's definitely fair to mention that it goes both ways on that aspect. I'm glad you mentioned Edwin Diaz. I think Diaz is a top 7 closer option. I'm not even sure he doesn't move back into the rotation next year for Seattle because they have nobody in that system, but that's a different story.
He very well could, but... You know, either way, I just want to mention, like, we saw this coming a bit with Edwin Diaz. So
fits the profile. You're absolutely right. And next year, if you're rebuilding a keeper dynasty, he's definitely going to pitch major league innings. So get on that. If the situation you brought up earlier, if someone is giving him away for what seems to be pennies on the dollar, he's worth an ad because he will pitch major league innings next year. So that's for sure.
And moving on to the second guy in this deal, Grant Holmes, you know, guy that had his season kind of cut short last year due to a drug suspension, you know, has always kind of had a few little problems, but he's always been a strong guy, you know, definitely has a nice, you know, 6'1 frame on him, 215. I certainly like the frame. He's always been a guy that struck out a ton of hitters in the minor leagues. He gets sent over to Oakland, you know, a really good landing spot for him. He's only in high A, so obviously there's a few more years before we see somebody like Grant Holmes, but what are you thinking about him in terms of fantasy stock right now, and especially in keeper and dynasty leagues? Are you wanting to buy a Grant Holmes, or are you kind of, if you have any shares of him, kind of letting him go at this point?
I like the, I mean, he's already going to projected to be in a good park in LA, going to a good park in Oakland, but he's adding a DH, so I don't think the stock changes much there. He has a very punchable face if you've ever seen him. Like, I'm not a violent guy by any means, but I kind of want to punch him. But, you know, he's 20 years old in high A. I think he's a mid-rotation guy. The stuff's kind of come backwards. The walks are a problem. The command and control needs to be tightened up. He's an absolute – he's still got number two starter upside if he tightens that up. He throws easy gas. He's got a good body. He should be a durable guy, going to log a lot of innings. He'll rack up the Ks, but he's really inefficient with his pitches. And he's the type of guy right now that he'll get you – you know, he'll go through five innings, but he'll throw 100 pitches to get there. You know what I mean? He's not very efficient. He's going to be not an asset in WHIP. He's always going to walk a lot of guys. This is how he goes right at you. He's not scared, but he's more name value, I think, than actual fantasy value.
Yeah, he has kind of fringy fastball commands, but he does have a really nice power curve. Which is, you know, obviously a good thing to see.
I
agree with that. I think from a fantasy sense, he could be a number two fantasy starter during his peak if everything kind of, you know, gets together and he's able to command the fastball and also get that changeup in order as well. You know, something you mentioned is, you know, overall strikeout to walk rate command. You know, we'll definitely want to monitor and keep that, you know, in our minds. I know that Oakland is big on control. They like to, you know, not give away free passes. They definitely have good pitching coaches down there. So I think that, you know, Holmes probably stays about the same for me. Somebody that I think is a top 20-ish starter in the minor leagues at this current moment. You know, maybe you could push him higher if you felt like, you know, he has a little bit more upside than some other guys. But overall, I like the move. I like that it
definitely
increases his value, even though he's adding a DH. I think that this is a solid move. And I think that, you know, there's certainly a possibility of him being a number two starter in fantasy at some point throughout, you know, the next few years.
I agree. It's for Oakland, for Rich Hill being a rental, and Josh Reddick also. I mean, I think they're both in contract years. I think they did very well here.
Yeah, from a baseball perspective, I certainly think Oakland did what needed to be done with this move, especially getting rid of a guy, a 36-year-old in Rich Hill, who, you know, didn't have any time left after this year, you know, as a rental essentially, and getting, you know, two starters. You know, we're about to talk about Jarrell Cotton here, but getting a couple starters that could be at least mid rotation arms, possibly more, and then possibly an elite closer in Montas. That's a really good move for them.
Absolutely.
So the last piece of this deal is, you know, the aforementioned Jarrell Cotton, not as high of an upside as somebody like Grant Holmes. He doesn't have, like, his breaking ball isn't nearly as good as Holmes. He's still working on the changeup, just like somebody like Holmes as well. The fastball velocity is kind of back and forth. At times he's looking like he could throw 95, at other times he's sitting 91. So we're still looking at a little bit of inconsistency, but with somebody like Cotton, but overall has shown pretty well this season as a whole, especially with the Dodgers in AAA here. You know, through almost 100 innings this year, he had 11 strikeout per nine, which is certainly what we like to see. Kept the walk rate under 3 per 9. He did have a little bit of homeritis or gopheritis, but overall, you know, not a strong performance, you know, in the minors, 4.59 ERA during his time with the Dodgers this year, but still is showing some promise. Do you like Cotton more than Holmes, or are you still sticking with Holmes?
This is kind of a minority opinion, but I actually do. I like Cotton the best of anyone they got in this trade.
Really?
Yeah, I he's always been one of the guys on my rankings. I've always ranked him pretty high. I had him as a borderline, I want to say. I don't have him rankings in front of me, so I apologize, but he was pretty high up compared to where I've seen anywhere else on mine. Kid from the Virgin Islands. Went to East Carolina. Late round draft pick. He throws a lot of strikes. He pumps strikes. And the thing, my favorite thing about Cotton is his best pitch is his changeup. And that'll play anywhere. And you mentioned the home run trouble. It's worth noting he's pitching in the PCL, which is terrible for pitchers.
True. Well, he had home run trouble last year too, though.
He did. Yeah, no, that's fair.
I mean, not nearly as much as this year, you know, don't get me wrong. But he also gave up a home run in his first start with Athletics, which I believe is also in the PCL, so it's probably the same difference. But
better park in the PCL, which is fair. Better park, but still the PCL.
No.
But
yeah. You're right, though, on that, because last year, you know, while he did have a little bit of home run problems, it wasn't nearly as bad as this year. So it probably does play into the PCL.
And in 2014, he had bad home run problems, but that's also in the Cal League.
Yeah.
So, like, you know what I mean? It's really hard to judge.
He's certainly closer as well. I mean, Holmes is still in high A. You're looking at a guy with Cotton here that could possibly be making some major league starts towards the end of the year.
Yeah, I could definitely see him in the major league bullpen at the very minimum at the end of the year. I like this kid a lot. I'm not sure what kind of role he's going to play for fantasy aspect, because he might be a reliever. but he's going to throw a lot of strikes. And like my favorite thing, like I said, best pitch is a changeup. And changeup, I feel like, is a feel pitch, and it's hard to teach. And it's the best pitch in baseball if you can locate it. So
that's he's still working on it, like Holmes, and he has a less effective, you know, curve. But you know, again, Oakland is a big proponent for having a changeup. They like to have the fastball changeup mix, good command of the pitches, and I do think you're onto something there. Cotton does seem like the guy that doesn't have as much upside, but seems like a safer bet. So if you're kind of risk averse, I don't mind leaning Cotton and trying to acquire him right now, especially since everybody has already associated somebody like Grant Holmes with a elite pitching prospect. They just kind of automatically assume that. So, you know, you easily could probably do Gerald Cotton and a piece for somebody like Holmes if you're looking to make that move.
I completely agree with that. And Cotton's a guy that, like I said, I had him circled on my list. He's a guy I would be looking to acquire.
Agreed. You know, let's move on to the next trade. You know, we're going to be talking about a guy that we've really talked about multiple times on this podcast already. But the Giants, you know, Justin Mason's great team, the San Francisco Giants, made a couple moves during this trade deadline here. The first one being the Will Smith trade. They ended up acquiring Will Smith, and they traded away to Milwaukee, Phil Bickford and Andrew Susak. Susak has already been a major leaguer. They already have Jacob Nottingham there, so that obviously affects him a bit negatively in that aspect. So, you know, there's not much to say on somebody like Susak, but as far as Bickford goes, you know, you and I both have mentioned how much we love the guy. And, you know, knowing that eventually he was going to be in San Francisco in that really spacious, nice ballpark, that was certainly part of the excitement, you know, surrounding somebody like Bickford. But going and moving to Miller Park has me a bit concerned. Never really been a guy that's given up a ton of home runs in the minor leagues, but you're also looking at a place in Miller Park that is one of the top four, you know, hitters parks in all of baseball. So, you know, how much does that concern you with Bickford once he makes the major leagues? And, you know, where are you kind of at with him following this trade?
I like Bickford. We've touched on him a lot. I think he was the best arm moved at the deadline.
I agree.
And his velocity is kind of, it's weird. Right now, Bickford's throwing low 90s, which when he was drafted, he was throwing 94, 95. So hopefully that comes back. He kind of had a weird path to the majors. He was I forget where he went to college. Somewhere in Cal State Fullerton, I believe. And he was going to go there, and he was drafted first round by the Blue Jays. Didn't sign.
I think he was a JUCO kid.
Yeah, then he ended up going to the JUCO after that because he didn't sign and couldn't sign with an agent because he had an agent, so he couldn't go to college and like a D1 school. So he went to College of Southern Nevada, which I believe is where Bryce Harper went. And he got drafted again first round the next season by the Brewers and kind of signed there. By the Giants, and now he's in Milwaukee. But he's a really interesting guy for me. He's two pitches right now, and that's the problem. He needs to develop a changeup. He's got the good fastball. Like I said, hopefully the velocity comes back, but it's doable now even if it doesn't. Really good off-speed pitch. At very worst, he's a back-end starter, but I still think I'm buying him as a number two starter. Or if the Giants want to fast – or keep saying Giants, I'm sorry. If the Brewers want to fast-track him, he can be an elite back-end reliever for me.
So. Yeah, I don't think they'll fast-track him. I think they're going to definitely take their time.
Yeah, they don't have reason to. The Giants could have been fast-tracking him because, you know, they're always in contention. But it's a good point with Milwaukee. They're lucky to take their time and develop him as a starter.
Mm-hmm. I agree that he needs to develop a third pitch. That changeup is still kind of fringy at this point. So we certainly want to see that develop. You know, still strong velocity, strong slider. I'm definitely intrigued by that. In terms of the home ballpark, we don't know if he even ends up in Miller Park. There's definitely a chance that he gets traded again at some point. So right now, I think that you just kind of hold steady with somebody like Bickford. I think he is one of the few pitching prospects that can deliver number one or number two upside, which is so valuable. So I think that right now is the time to just kind of hold steady. If you want to acquire him, I don't mind doing that, but just don't overpay. I would take him over Grant Holmes, but, you know, I wouldn't be throwing out guys like, you know, Francis Martez at him.
I completely agree. And you had to bring up Martez, huh? Because I traded him to you.
But. Yep. I definitely did. And, you know, I love me some Martez. So
yeah, I don't love me some Matt Moore, but I'm trying to win a ring, so I need to get the innings.
Yeah, no worries. So let's move on to the next trade. That was Carlos Beltran going to the Texas Rangers. In exchange was Dylan Tate, who has had some prospect, kind of hype in the past. And then we have other kind of middling names, Eric Swanson and Nick Green here. We'll talk a little bit about Dylan Tate since he is the biggest, name on this prospect's, haul here for the Yankees. What's your temperature on Tate? Are you kind of thinking he's long-term a reliever at this point, or are you wanting to still count on him as possibly being a starter?
I think you have to give him every chance to still be a starter, obviously. If you're the Yankees, I think that's what you have to look for. It is worth noting, though, I don't know what the circumstances were. It could have been a rehab start for somebody, but his first game for the Yankees, he actually came out of the bullpen. It was a three-inning stint, so it could be like a piggyback kind of deal. So I don't know what to take out of that. But he's in high A at 22, being a high draft pick out of college. It's still kind of disappointing how he's turned out so far. His stuff has gone backwards. The walks are increasingly becoming more of a problem. The stuff has, like I said, gone backwards. He was a top of the rotation arm for me. Now I don't know what to make of him. I, to be safe, I'm going to throw a mid-rotation arm ceiling on him just because I think he still has the stuff if he can regain it. Maybe the change of scenery will be great for him, but I'm a bit worried about him here. And I had him ranked fairly high, but he's dropping down my list quite a bit.
I certainly think that he should drop down lists because the move to the Yankees is not a good one. They certainly don't do a good job of developing their pitchers.
Michael Pineda.
Well, he wasn't somebody that was developed though.
No,
I'm talking about their young starters. They really don't do a great job. I mean, we're seeing what happened with Luis Severino, somebody that was supposed to be their prized pitching possession, and he struggled mightily. Kind of with a similar repertoire, a guy that has a really good fastball, really good slider, and then we're looking at just really inconsistency in the command and inconsistency with the changeup. So certainly something to monitor with Tate, but as much I think that a lot of people share the same sentiments as you regarding him. So in that sense, I wouldn't mind grabbing and taking a flyer on him, throwing out a lower level prospect and seeing maybe if I can get some lightning in a bottle with somebody like Tate. So, I wouldn't mind throwing out, Adalberto Mejia, the guy that we've talked about a ton on this show. I wouldn't mind throwing him out there for Dylan Tate because I think the upside is much higher. Even a Mike Clevenger, who is already in the majors, I wouldn't mind throwing to, the Dylan Tate owner because I feel like there still is a ton of upside in that arm. We just have to see if it can kind of get honed in and, perform to the capabilities that we know he can be at. I mean, he really hasn't had a ton of innings in the minors yet. So, we need to kind of, it's going to be something that we wait on, but I think I'm a little higher on him than you are.
Yeah, I think you are, but hey, I was really high on this kid coming out of UC Santa Barbara, but we'll see. I hope I'm wrong. I like the kid and, it's always fun to see someone with rec specs out there on the mound, so I hope he makes it.
Well, talking about a guy that people were really high on, Alex Meyer was part of the Angels deal to move Santiago or Hector Santiago for Ricky Nolasco and Alex Meyer. I'll just ask you this simply. Any hope for Alex Meyer ever?
No. He can be a seventh inning reliever for somebody. I don't think he throws enough strikes to be relied on in high leverage.
But, yeah, I think we've already given him enough time on the show, to be honest with you.
Yep. So, I like Alan Buzenitz better than him, and Buzenitz was in that deal going the other way, so it is what it is.
How about Yordan Alvarez from the Dodgers? Got traded to Houston in the Josh Fields deal. You're a little bit intrigued by him. Tell me why.
The Dodgers just signed him to a $2 million deal this free agent period for international guys, $2 million from Cuba as a first base only guy, which I guess it's not as much money as it was a couple of years ago. I mean, $2 million and the Dodgers signing him. Everyone thinks the Dodgers I'm always intrigued by what the Dodgers do, but I mean, I think their strategy in Cuba is just kind of sign everybody for whatever the hell you can and then get them over here. And then we scout them. Cause I mean, they've hit on, well, I guess you could say they hit on Puig, but I don't know if they call that a hit anymore. But you got guys like Alex Guerrero, who they kind of bombed on, Hector Oliveira, who they bombed on, Arispel Eterbueno, who they bombed on, and it's intriguing that they signed him, but he's a first base only guy. He's got above average power. The numbers in Cuba, he's a contact oriented hitter, but the numbers in Cuba show that. But he's a more power guy, but he's a contact oriented guy because of the approach that his team in Cuba wanted him to have at 17. He hit like 391 at 17 years old, so it's kind of intriguing. But it's going to be a long time till he comes up. Just a name to file away. You're not rostering him in any formats, but just keep aware.
Yeah, I agree. He's still insanely young, too, only 19. So, you're looking at a guy that is certainly going to take some time, but could have ended up in worse places other than Houston. So, certainly.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, if Houston takes a flyer on you, it means you have some sort of standout tool that they like. So, they're never a bad organization to copy it in fantasy formats.
Agreed. So let's move on to something that I think is much more interesting to fantasy owners for sure. Matt Moore deal to San Francisco, who definitely is in it to win it this year. I have no problem with them giving away some pretty much their only minor league assets at this point, other than Christian Arroyo, in exchange for trying to win a championship this year. They give away they're one of, if not the highest fantasy asset in Lucius Fox, 19-year-old. Obvious asset is speed, has done a solid job of stealing bases this year. There's still projectability in the power. I mean, signed for $6 million prior to the season starting. What can we expect from somebody like Lucius Fox? What are we looking for from Lucius Fox from now forward?
Well, he's a kid from the Bahamas, so that's kind of interesting. He kind of did, I don't know if you're familiar with the Alex Reyes path to the professional baseball, but he kind of did the same thing. He had relatives in the Bahamas, moved to the Bahamas, kind of dodged the draft a little bit, played high school ball up until his junior year. Before his senior year, moved to the Bahamas with his family and signed for $6.5 million as opposed to getting drafted. So that's a big win. He was the number three guy on the 2015 international list, according to Fangraphs. He's a real quick twitch shortstop guy. He's going to stick it short, but he could also play center because of the wheels, and they think he can play out there. The big thing with him is his above-average hit tool, projected anyways. Right now it's not close to that, but he's an above-average runner, and he has an above-average hit tool, so that's always interesting from fantasy format.
Yeah, another interesting thing is that the Rays were not made aware of the fact that he had a bone bruise on his foot, so they obviously were not very happy with that, and are trying to kind of mend that deal where they get something in return from the Giants for that.
That seems like something Justin would do, doesn't it?
It does. He's certainly a sly guy that likes to try and make sure that he gets the upper hand on some things prior to doing it. But regardless, I think Lucius Fox has a high, high upside for fantasy leagues. I certainly think that he could fit a mold where he is stealing 30, 40 bases a year in the major leagues. And pretty easily. The power, like you've kind of mentioned, is not an asset for him, but it's something that I think could develop into the, 8 to 10 to 12 range at some point during his peak years. Certainly has gap to gap power, natural raw athlete. So, you definitely like to bank on the athleticism and the talent when they're young, but we have a ton of time to wait. The Rays slow roast their prospects. So if you know some people in your league that are insanely high on somebody like Lucius Fox and are rebuilding and you're trying to win now, I certainly think that it's a good move to trade Fox, because I don't think you see him any earlier than, 2018. And that's really pushing it.
And one thing, real quick on Fox, well, we'll see if it's quick. Hopefully it is. You see Fox, don't scout the stat line with this kid. You look at him in A-ball. He's playing full season A-ball at 19 years old. He's hitting 207, 305, 277, but he's 19. We just mentioned Grant Holmes, who started, he was in that league to begin the season. He's much older. Dylan Tate's in the same league as him now. Like, holding your own at 19 in a full season league is impressive as hell. So this kid is potentially a player. 25 steals, he caught seven times, but again, he's only 19. And he was 18 when the league started, so Gotta give him some respect there. He's a switch hitter, too. Makes him more interesting also. But don't scout the stat line here, because there's potentially something here. So
certainly. And, I think that there's some jerks and profar to his game, too, as far
definitely.
As
I like that.
Being the switch hitter, not having the biggest power, you know, upside in the world, but really solid speed asset, good defensive guy. I think he has even a higher upside than Jurickson Profar at some point if things kind of broke his way. So high upside for Lucius Fox.
Yeah, Profar with less power, more speed.
Yeah, absolutely. Another high upside play, not the highest in the world, but Michael Santos was the other piece of this deal, sent to the Rays in exchange, you know, for Matt Moore. We also have Matt Duffy as well, but, you know, we won't get into that since this is not a major league show necessarily. But I really liked the refined, you know, mechanics that Santos has shown. He's not advanced enough yet. You know, he still was only an A ball this year with the Giants. So, you know, he's somebody that, you know, didn't show a ton of upside, has three solid pitches, still working again. It's kind of a common theme on the show, but really working on the changeup. But based on the fact that he has a nice 6'4 frame, that he can still fill out a bit more. He's only 170 according to Fangraphs. I think he probably will fill out another, you know, 15 to 20 pounds as he progresses through the major or to the majors. But, you know, refined approach with his pitching, very good at repeating his mechanics, you know, subpar changeup, but has a pretty decent fastball, not the highest velocity in the world, and a pretty decent curveball as well. But where do you think that we should rate somebody like Santos? A lot of times you and I are in the camp of not really waiting on guys like this. We kind of think that they come from everywhere, and we've talked about a ton of them this year. This is just another one to add to the fold.
Yeah, he's still probably a back end guy with a chance like to be a number three starter, but that's not really a guy you want to roster in fantasy formats. However, he is very well worth knowing and writing down and filing away, because I'm glad you said it. The big thing with Santos is the projection here. 6'4", 190. I'm glad you said 15, 20 pounds, because I can see that, and with that added good weight. Keyword is good if he's in the weight room and doing it. Build that low 90s fastball up into the mid 90s. And when he profiles to have, like you said, the three average secondaries, a guy that all of a sudden throws mid 90s to three average secondaries becomes more than that, becomes more than a mid rotation guy. And he has elite level command and control for a guy his age. At 21 years old, he's on the DL right now, unfortunately. I believe it's a minor back injury, but I'm not sure. Minor back injury doesn't make any sense, but. Nothing to be worried about long-term, I guess, is from what I read. But the command is impressive. 5 walks in 58 innings as a starter. 10 games, 44-5 strikeout-to-walk ratio. That's nice. And the projection is there with this kid. I think it wouldn't surprise me if he was the major league asset for the Rays for a while, because they do pretty well with pitching, and Giants also do. So he's coming from a good organization, going to one that's probably better. So we'll see. I expect to see Santos in the major leagues, but it will be a little bit. But he's a good little ad for them here.
Yeah, went from one nice pitching organization to another. I think that you can compare him, not exactly, but pretty close to somebody like Jake Odorizzi. Always showed really good command in the minors. Somebody that never really, he kind of lacked a third pitch, but kind of developed it as it went on. It happened to be the split changeup once he got to the major leagues. He took that from, you know, Alex Cobb.
He could have learned this pitch too. There you go.
Yeah. Yep. We could see somebody like Santos during spring, you know, during spring training or camp, learn this third pitch from somebody else and really hone in on it, since he has the build to do so.
Definitely.
Go ahead.
No, I was just a good kid to file away. If he puts up good numbers again next year, it might be time to add him. But not right
I agree. Now. I agree. You know, another guy that I think should have been added a long time ago, I'm so surprised just isn't in the major leagues yet. He logged 103 plate appearances with the Mets in 2015. That was coming off of 66 plate appearances in 2014. Dilson Herrera, you know, gets moved to the Reds in the Jay Bruce deal. You know, somebody that I've always really liked, you know, I just never really understood why he never stayed up. I guess, you know, there's always been kind of reasons that the Mets have never kept him up in the majors, but, you know, he gets moved over to the Cincinnati Reds, a team that is obviously rebuilding, you know, pretty decent shot of hitting the major leagues at some point this year, and will probably be a mainstay for them at second base. Pretty much sucks ass for Jose Peraza owners, but what do you think about Dilson Herrera, and especially from a fantasy angle?
I'm glad you said Dilson Perez, because I like that kid too.
But, I know you do.
Dilson Herrera, though, I'm glad you said it too, because I mean we're on the same page here. I always liked him. I think the writing on the wall was for him, for his future in New York, was kind of made permanent when they got Jose Reyes. because I think this guy can supply everything that Reyes was supposed to be. You know what I mean? I like Herrera, high contact guy. He's got a little bit of speed and a little bit of power. He's a little guy, but he's thick. He's a little short, thick guy that can drive the ball. He's put up good power numbers, especially for a second baseman. He's one of my favorite unheralded minor league players, to be honest. And Cincinnati, I think, did very well to grab him for Bruce. I wouldn't have liked him as the headliner. I would have liked him as the second piece, but nice add nonetheless.
Yeah, I like Dustin Herrera a lot. I think he's going to be a solid middle infielder for deeper leagues starting next season, to be honest with you. And, you know, when I say decent middle infielder, I think that he's going to be somebody that puts up double-digit home runs, double-digit stolen bases, hits for a solid batting average, meaning, you know, 260, 270-plus, which is certainly good enough. I think he certainly has the upside for more, but... You know, somebody that I just think people have forgotten about. You mentioned that you said the word unheralded. I completely agree with that. And somebody that probably you can get for the cheap right now. So Dustin Herrera, you pick him up, grab him for nothing. I'm certainly in on him.
Keep in mind, he's 22 years old, but he's in AAA, and he's producing hell of a good numbers in AAA. So
absolutely agree.
I love this kid.
Somebody I don't really love is Reese McGuire, and he was just given to the Toronto Blue Jays, obviously a better place to hit than Pittsburgh. Also, along with Harold Ramirez, those are kind of the two headliners of the deal for Drew Hutchinson. You also had Francisco Liriano moved over to Toronto as well, but again, we're not going to get into the major leaguers here. Although I do want to mention that I think Drew Hutchinson will have a very, very good transition to the National League, especially in Pittsburgh. So if you didn't hear that on the last episode, make sure that you listen to that and make sure you grab Hutchinson everywhere. But as far as Reese McGuire goes, there's, you know, a lot of people that are really into minor league catching prospects nowadays, you know, and you have some of your higher upside guys like, you know, Jorge Alfaro, who probably won't stay behind the plate forever, especially with the way Cameron Rube has been playing this year. Jacob Nottingham's in the world, Chance Sisko's in the world, Zach Collins, who was just drafted, Francisco Mejia, who's been, you know, solid this year. But Reese McGuire, as good as he is defensively, and while you'll see him on minor league lists because of the fact that he is solid defensively, he's just not a fantasy impact catcher, right?
No, not at all. He's never going to hit enough to be anything better than a man. What's a major league comp I'm looking for? A catcher with barely hits for batting average. He's going to hit about 240, 250, but he's going to give you maybe two home runs, three home runs the whole season. He's a stellar defensive guy.
Jeff Mathis?
Yeah, I was like Chris Stewart. Like, I'm also probably the lowest guy possible on Reese McGuire. He wasn't even in my top 200 list when I released that. I hate catching prospects, number one. I think there's way too many variables. We've discussed this before. Way too many variables for guys to follow along with. And he's getting moved up levels despite not hitting. And some guys, you know, like we're talking about catchers when they're hitting in the ball, but they're still stuck down in levels. He's moving up with terrible offensive stats because he's an elite defensive catcher. As far as complete package and maybe having possible fantasy impact, no, he's not going to have any. I like the guy that the Rays got, Jonah Heim, more than I like McGuire for an overall fantasy catcher. And that says a lot because I don't like Heim that much either. So,
in over 1,000 plate appearances in the minor leagues, guess how many home runs Reese McGuire has?
Three.
Pretty damn close. Four. He has four.
Yeah, that's all you need to know.
He does have some stolen bases, so you know I won't think that he is, you know, a complete wasteland in fantasy, but I think he will get the Austin Hedges treatment of being overrated just because he's on all of these other minor league prospect lists at catcher.
That's a good comp, actually.
And people won't look at him from a fantasy lens.
That's a really good comp. I'm glad you said Hedges, but Hedges is starting to hit the ball in AAA, so we'll see if that's any different. But
and some guys, you know, we've mentioned it a ton, but some guys, they get it later on, especially at the catcher position. You know, so I don't want to just completely give out. I don't like to completely give up on players automatically just because they've seemed a certain way in the minor leagues.
No, yeah. I mean, let's focus on some of the positives on McGuire then, since we're kind of dogging him out here. But he's 21 in AA as a catcher with. That's freak status because that's awesome.
And he's hitting for a solid average, and he doesn't strike out a ton. He never has struck out a ton at all.
The play skills are outstanding. 29 walks to 28 strikeouts in AA as 21-year-old. I mean, that's solid. Left-handed hitter, some appeal there.
More than he's striking out right now or this year in Double A.
Decent speed because he's an athlete. I mean, he's an athletic kid. I guess if you have a roster spot in really deep minor leagues, or you have a whole minor league separate minor league team, how some leagues have that. I mean, I'm not dropping him unless you need to. Don't go out and cut him for a mid rotation guy. I mean, you can roster him and maybe he puts it together offensively, but I'm not expecting it. But you could do worse with a roster spot like that, I guess.
Oh, I don't like catchers.
I don't like catchers though, so I'm also negative on McGuire. But
yeah, I'm not trying to be. That's the thing, is like I'm negative on him, but I don't want us to seem like we're just completely ruling him out to ever have fantasy value. I think 3 years from now, if we're talking about Reese McGuire with the Blue Jays, he's somebody that is hitting 5 to 8 home runs a year. You know, somewhere in the vicinity of 10 to 12 stolen bases, and, you know, throwing that in with a pretty solid batting average, which
sure
is useful in some leagues. So
OBP formats, he might have
more batting appeal average,
in two catcher formats. Yeah, he could be a not terrible back end guy for you.
But I agree.
It'll be on someone else's teams, not mine.
Harold Ramirez, the other piece of this deal, somebody that certainly has more of a speed, you know, asset to his game, you know, still pretty young at 21, but, you know, in Double A, so he's pretty average for the level. You know, what are we thinking with somebody like Harold Ramirez? Is he just somebody that, you know, is on the back burner of our minds and, you know, should be, you know, just, you know, somebody that we're speculating on later on, or should we put him at the forefront of our minds since they hate Dalton Pompey in Toronto and maybe he actually gets a shot with that speed?
Well, the thing with Ramirez is I think he's 5'10", 220. I think he might get bigger than that. As he fills out, I think he's going to lose some of that speed. And he's already not utilizing the speed enough. Yeah, he's got 7 triples, which is nice, but he's stolen 7 bags, but he's been caught 10 times. That's not great.
That's unfortunate.
And I don't think he can play center, and especially can't play center if he gets bigger. So I think he's a corner outfielder that doesn't have a lot of power, and I don't think that's valuable in a lot of anything, really. Unfortunately, I like the bat skills. He's going to hit for good average. He barrels up a lot of balls, but he's not anybody he's a fifth outfielder at the major league level, so not really rosterable in fantasy formats for me.
Yeah, I agree. I think that he is not a high upside fantasy piece, which if you're speculating on outfielders in, you know, the fantasy landscape, especially amongst minor leaguers, there's just a ton of other guys that you can go after. So
I'm gonna do a who would you rather here with you. You have to pick one. You can't say neither, because that's what I would say. It would be neither if I could, but I'm not going to.
Neither.
Harold Ramirez or Billy McKinney.
Oh.
They're about the same to me. Like tweener guys. You know what I mean?
I'd go McKinney.
I would too, because upside, but they're both in the same boat for me.
I'm not a McKinney guy either.
And can't play center, so doesn't run enough. Yeah, they're both kind of in the same tier for me of fourth, fifth outfielder for real life, which means not rosterable in fantasy.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was a sad would you rather. We need to come up.
I appreciate you, you know, pretty much making me borderline suicidal at this moment. So to make me not borderline suicidal, we can talk about the last trade that we are going to talk about this episode, and that is the Jonathan Lucroy deal. And guess what the Milwaukee Brewers got in return for Jonathan Lucroy?
What'd they get?
Well, they got this one dude. I don't know if you've heard his name before, but his name is Lewis Brinson.
Okay.
He's the type of guy that I have at some point compared to Mike Trout. He's also a consensus top 5 fantasy prospect, but you know, you probably haven't heard of him. If you haven't heard of him, they also got this guy named Luis Ortiz, who, you know, some people have mentioned some good things about, some people haven't, but you know, for lack of me trying to be funny here, the Brewers got a massive haul in this deal.
They did. They
from
did
a,
well.
From a baseball perspective, they did a great job. They did exactly what you're supposed to do with somebody like Jonathan Lucroy. And, you know, I give it up to Texas for saying, you know what, we need a catcher to send us to the next level. And, you know, because our pitching certainly isn't going to do it. and they decided to make that move. Would I have done it if I was Texas? I really don't know. But
I don't know.
I highly doubt tough. It, to be honest.
They didn't give up anything off their major league team, so that says something, because they have – or Joey Gallo. So
yeah. And that's certainly encouraging for them.
I think I might have rather given up Gallo than Brinson, though, but that's just me.
Yeah, me too. I mean, can you imagine Gallo in Miller Park? That probably is unfair. It's probably as unfair as it is to have Chris Carter over there, because we've seen what Chris Carter can do just in Miller Park alone.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we'll start off with Brinson here. There's really not much change, you know, in my opinion. Oh. From a fantasy perspective, he is still, you know, if not the top bat in the minor leagues, he's a top three guy. We've already talked about Yoan Moncada. I think he is the consensus number one, not only fantasy prospect in the minor leagues currently, but just overall prospect. So behind him, you know, you still have guys like Gallo around. You have guys like Victor Robles, you know, Brendan Rodgers, who is a ton of years away. But, you know, somebody like Lewis Brinson is still at the top of my list in terms of fantasy guys, legitimate, you know, 30-30 upside, in my opinion. This year, if we want a quick update on him, he was in AA. The Brewers started him off in AAA, which is nice to see, because he certainly could get some time this year in the major leagues if things kind of fell right for him.
He's destroying the ball in Milwaukee right now.
Yeah, he, you know, for the Rangers for the majority of the season, he had double-digit home runs, double-digit stolen bases, 300 at-bats or so. You know, looking at a guy that had, you know, a not very good walk rate, but was doing a little bit better on the strikeout side than he has at some points in his career. But the main point is that you're seeing progression. He moved from a good ballpark, especially in the summertime, to a ballpark that just plays amazing all year round. He's going to be the prized possession of this Milwaukee team. I think that, you know, the upside is so immense with him. It's up there with David Dahl, and he doesn't play in Coors. You know, I know you feel the same way.
Yeah, I do. He's one of the few guys, I mean, that could survive a trade from Texas and not lose value. That says
actually
a lot.
Actually, kind of gained value, really.
Yeah, because now, yeah, you're absolutely right, because there's less talent in the pipeline blocking him. He absolutely did gain value. You're 100% correct. My notes on Brinson, not that you need to know about him, because he's a guy that everyone knows. Thought it was notable. His first two games in AAA, he went 4-for-4 in the first one, and then hit a grand slam in the second game. You're looking at a guy, he's a 60 power, 60 speed, 60 arm, 60 glove. The question is the hit tool. When he makes contact, it's no doubt he barrels the shit out of balls. And he, like, I know you said Mike Trout. Yes, we all know there's no other Mike Trout, probably, but Brinson has the package to become that. It's a non-zero chance. You know, he's 99.999% not going to be Mike Trout, but every other player is 100% not going to be Mike Trout. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a small chance. The numbers in AAA, or the numbers in the minor leagues, a little bit of a step down for Brinson overall. Yeah, the 254, 296, 450, not great. But the tools are all there. The big thing to look for him is the contact rate, like you said, the strikeout rate. He's improved. He's at 22 years old, already in AAA. Late 2017 is a reasonable expectation for me for him to reach the show and stay there. To be 22 in AAA and full of all the tools he has is amazing. The work ethic that he has, and it's a testament to the work ethic that how quickly he rose up there. I'm surprised Texas gave him up, because they have a clear organizational, I don't want to say hole, but there's an opening in him to easily be their center fielder of the future. It's kind of a big loss for them there, but getting Lucroy is nice for, they're going to go forward this year, but this deal might hurt them a lot in the long run. This is going to hurt.
Mm-hmm. You know, Brinson's my number two prospect from a fantasy perspective right now, right behind Moncada. Love both of them. You really, I mean, it's a toss up between the two. If I had to pick, I would go Moncada, but
please, I would too.
Please don't ever make me do that.
No, I won't. I would go Moncada too. But.
In regards to Luis Ortiz, another fine piece in this move or in this deal here. You know, he's going to be pitching in AA for the Brewers just right off the bat. Still a pretty strong frame, 6'3", 230. That's about all you can ask for. Doesn't have the upside of an MLB ace, but can definitely accrue strikeouts because of his 2+ pitches, the fastball and the slider. You know, another guy that needs to refine a changeup. Again, a common theme throughout this show. But I really like the move. I think he is, again, going to be a pitcher that we can look for in fantasy as a number three at some point once he gets, you know, kind of all the way there. You know, he has flashes of being elite in the strikeout category. He's still trying to figure it out this year, but it's going to be some time before we see a full workload from him, because, you know, this year so far he's only thrown, you know, somewhere in the vicinity of 70 innings. You know, last year he threw about, what, 55. So, you know, we've seen some stamina concerns, and, you know, we've seen kind of some kid gloves on him, but still plenty of time for him to get things in order. He's almost 21. So I think, you know, by the time he, you know, we reach, what, the beginning of 2018, maybe late next year, we'll see him up in the majors, but more than likely somewhere in 2018.
Yeah. One thing, I'm glad you touched on it. You're hitting all the points I had highlighted. He's only pitched 140 career innings in the minor leagues, despite being a first round pick in 2014. So obviously that's an issue. Health has gotten in the way a lot. Durability and makeup concerns. I've read a lot of questionable things. He's been into some issues with teammates when he was with the Rangers. I guess from my understanding is Luis Ortiz's three favorite people in the world are Luis Ortiz
and Josh Naylor.
And Luis Ortiz. He loves himself, I guess, is what I've heard. I think he's a number two starter long term, but it might be a little longer than you want to wait, because, like I referenced, the innings, he had an elbow injury and was shut down. But I still, despite the lack of innings, he's already in Double A as a 20-year-old. So that tells you what they think of his stuff. I mean, his stuff His stuff is off the charts. Like I said, 140 innings of pro ball, and 42 of those are in Double A at 20 years old. So, like, that's huge. He got $1.75 million to sign. If he can stay out of his own way and stay healthy, I think he's going to be a stud.
Is he the best arm or highest upside arm amongst the guys we've talked about this podcast? For you,
that's tough. I love Bickford, but I would say Ortiz is the highest upside arm. I'm just not sure he reaches it.
Yeah, for me, I still am leaning Bickford. You know, did I mention Francis Martez? Was he in this show? Or
you did mention him. You did, but man, Ortiz has the highest upside. I just don't think he gets there. I think Bickford is a safer guy with high upside for me.
Well, luckily for the Brewers, they're both on the same team, so we'll be able to find out.
And we'll be able to revisit this, and I'll be able to tweet at you that I was right in a couple of years, if I remember.
Absolutely. So with that said, let's wrap things up. Matt, I think that was a good analyzation of all, if that's even a word, of the moves that were done. Let people know where you can be reached and all of that jazz. That way they can get at you for questions.
Yeah, no doubt. If anyone cares, I think the Yankees and Brewers were big winners at the trade deadline. But anyways.
I agree with you. And I honestly think that the Yankees did what needed to be done.
I think they cleared a lot of room for Bryce Harper in 2018 to play with a lot of guys making the league minimum when he's making $40 million a year.
Agreed.
But anyways. Tweet at me at MBTemp24. Let's talk prospects, and you can make fun of me for being wrong and praise me for being right. But just get at me. Let's have some interaction. Let's get it.
You can only praise me for being right at my corner FWFB. And, you know, like the usual stuff going on, we have fantasy football kind of starting up here. We have a bunch of shows coming out per week with that. Subscribe to that feed, rate and review that feed as well. Please check out the, you know, prospects list that Matt puts on the site. Check out all of the baseball content on friendswithfantasybenefits.com. Check out our football content on the site as well. Check out my daily matchups column up at baseballhq.com on Saturdays. I also have my Rays comments up on Fantasy Pros over the weekends and during the week as well. So check those out. And let's get at it, man. For Matt, myself, stay hungry, my friends. Every night I get you on the telephone. We sleep and we talk and we play till the dawn. Trying to get a handle on who we are. Sleep all night with the phone off the hook. Falling in love is never by the book. Getting close beneath the blanket of a million stars. that's all we want to do is talk Esan Diaz.
We'll throw some Harry Bader in there too.
Harry Bader and ideas.
Oh yeah, ride or die.
Oh my gosh, I literally am getting wet right now just thinking about Esan Diaz.
Should be, man.
What 11 do you think? Home runs and 11 stolen bases with, you said, what, 280 batting average-ish, 276?
18 homers, 11 steals.
Oh, sorry.
So 29 doubles, 5 triples, 18 homers, 11 steals, and 421 at-bats.
Dude, he's Robinson Cano with some speed. Like, he's Robinson Cano with speed.
And he might, well, with Arcia in the organization, he's not, but he's got an outside chance of sticking it short. Outside, yeah,
I think he'll stay. I think he'll get shifted to second, which really puts him on the Robinson Cano path.
I agree. And his swing is a clone to Cano as well.